Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, a special episode, October 22nd, 2016. This is where I live. Taking a walk in the neighborhood. See if I can get in. Help my sister get off. It's like tomorrow will be the same. No time, time for love and the ways of the world. Will it ever change? No more time for push and shove. Push and shove, push and shove. They are the Subdudes. 1991 CD that you can buy as a download at iTunes or anywhere download digital music is sold. $9.99. Name of the record is Lucky. Name of the song, Push and Shove. Serves as the title for today's show, The Push. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Today is a Saturday, October the 22nd, 2016, a special episode of Leaning Toward Wisdom, which really just means, well, it means two things. Number one, it's an unnumbered episode. You can find the show notes by going to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just plug in The Push, and it'll take you right there. It's special for a second reason, and that is because it's going to be an abbreviated edition and a little bit, I don't know, a little bit different format, perhaps shorter. Anyway, so that's that. leaningtowardwisdom.com. And I hope you will subscribe. I'm glad that you're here. He's pushing the 50th anniversary of A Wrecked Life. His description, not mine. I started to say, I don't think I would describe anybody's life as a wrecked life, but that's untrue because I have described some people's lives as wrecked. I don't know that I would describe his life as wrecked, but he's not one of those that on first appearance, there don't appear to be any drug or alcohol abuse issues, for instance. No hardened criminal record that I'm aware of. The line from some comedian leaps into the conversation. Well, I injected in the conversation. I can't remember who the comedian was, but it's always struck me as funny. He would say, I like to start out slow and then just peter out. And that's how this guy feels about his life. He was a fast achiever. Well, in fact, he was a supersonic achiever because, according to him, he peaked by the time he was 7. It's sad once you get past the funny. Second grade was the highlight of his life. And since then, he thinks it's pretty much been downhill all the way. Well, or an uphill push. Over the course of lengthy but very few conversations, he pulls. He pulls back the covers to bear the scars. Well, there might be physical scars. I don't know. I'm using this metaphorically, obviously. I don't know what physical scars he might have. But those aren't the ones that we're talking about. Instead, we talk about an abusive father who regularly abused him verbally, emotionally. Yeah, there was some physical violence as well. It's interesting that he struggles more with acknowledging the physical abuse than he does the other abuse. I mean, there are the ways of the human mind. We all have a history. I don't profess to know these things too terribly well, except by years of living and observation and listening. His history isn't a history that he's forgotten, nor is it one that, well, frankly, nor is it one that he would rather forget, which strikes me as rather odd. He's not telling his stories with this woe is me kind of an attitude or demeanor. Complaining, it's not really the proper term for what he's doing in these conversations. Unloading is a term that kind of comes to my mind. He's unloading years of the push, pushing to survive, pushing to get whatever the next step might be, pushing to achieve whatever dreams and goals he once had. I mean, it's easy to see that they're quickly being extinguished. Exhausting. And even a guy like me can understand. I can understand it, even though my life experience has been very, very different. And I can't really relate. I'm older by about a decade. Not quite. But there's something weird that happens with time and age gaps. You know this. They grow closer together, not further apart. Now, this literally isn't true, but it is true. The 30-year-old guy who marries the 20-year-old girl by the time he's 50 and she's 40, well, that decade gap just doesn't seem much at all. When he's 30 and she's 20, it does, but put a few decades on them and, they're about the same age. He and I were close enough in age to share some cultural references like music and TV shows and things like that, news events. But we are worlds apart in so many other ways. In fact, we're worlds apart in most every other way. His history is strewn with fractured relationships, broken marriages, long bouts of unemployment, few friends, no family. And what seems most strange to me is that he owns it, and he owns it all. And I'm fascinated, and at the same time, I'm very sad that he thinks his poor treatment by ill-equipped, I'm being kind, by ill-equipped, maybe mentally ill, for all I know, certainly alcoholic parents, that was his fault. He didn't come out and say it. I mean, just not that bluntly. But he does talk about his part in it. Keep in mind, I mean, come on, he was a kid. He talks about how he should have done things differently or not done some other things. And as I'm listening, I respect anybody who's willing to own their choices, anybody who's willing to own their behavior and face it. But when we're talking about children, I mean, come on, different rules apply. Yeah, yeah, he's a grown man now. In fact, he's an aging man, but that's not where the push started. It started before he ever entered school. Parents displayed no affection. You know, just a bunch of hollering and screaming and yelling and sometimes devolving into throwing things. And always berating him and what he was doing or what he had done wrong. The voice is Tevin Campbell. It's a guy. It is from a record. It's a CD that I love. It's a tribute to Curtis Mayfield, various artists. This song is Keep On Pushing. And as I said, the singer is Tevin, T-E-V-I-N Campbell. You can buy it at iTunes for $11.99. Has it ever dawned on you, and not that the Curtis is the man, not that he's homeless, he's not homeless, but living here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and if you live in any, certainly if you live in a metro area, but it's true of even, I suppose, of even moderately sized towns, maybe even small towns, there's a homeless population. Has it ever dawned on you just how resilient these people are? I remember a book many years ago. I think it was Andrew Tobias wrote it, How to Get By on $100,000 a Year. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and we were talking about the super rich and, the whether it's mythical or not, the 1% thing kind of came up. And I said, has it ever struck you that those of us that are able to live on something less than multi-millions of dollars a year, I mean, that we do have a skill that these people, Hey, can you imagine? Think of the richest person that you want to imagine. And I'm not saying that they couldn't figure it out, but man alive, you talk about a slog. Take your income, whatever it may be, however big or modest it may be, and now think of the richest people on the planet and think about how challenging it would be for them to just to even get up in the morning and face the day. It's just kind of crazy how my mind works. And I think about the homeless person who's out there with just nothing and yet surviving, somehow figuring it out and surviving. And I'm thinking, you know, wouldn't most of us just find an overpass and crawl under it and just die and you just give it up? Now, I realize there's mental illness and there's drug issues and alcoholism and all kinds of other issues in play for many, if not most, of these people. But here's a man, an aging man, and he's been pushing hard all of his life. School, well, that just, by the time he hit school, that was just an added push. You know, one more pile of weight that he was expected to push alone. Well, no shock, you know, no shock that he would struggle to get that done. And a lot more failure followed, confirming what everybody had told him in one form or another. You know, you're a loser. And today he recalls nearly 5 decades of a life by admitting it, by confessing it, really, that he is a loser. And listening to him talk about it, all the while that he is recollecting his choices that he now knows were foolish, because wisdom escaped him, because he acknowledges that, as he put it, he never learned how to exercise wisdom. His life has been mostly one foolish decision followed by another foolish decision followed by, well, trying to figure out, followed by another foolish decision. And he wonders if it's just in his DNA. He just wonders if it's just the gene pool. And who could blame him? And I'm not smart enough to know if there is validity to such a thought as that. I do know that we all have the power of choice, even if we have to push against our DNA, even if we have to push against our gene pool. But it's admittedly a push that he never took on. He did take on a whole lot of pushes, but not that one. It is one now that he wishes he would have figured out sooner. So me, I encourage him to start now. There's still time. Time for what? It's a good question. He poses a good question. Time for what? I said the only thing I knew to say. I don't know. For whatever you hope for now. Well, hope left a long time ago. Pushed out by all the adversity. Pushed out by all the failure. His situation, it does seem desperate to me, but that probably is because my life is so different. And like I said, if we were to take the richest people on the planet and put them, give them your bank account, give them your life and tell them to survive a week, many of them could not, even though you're living a good life. It's just not the life they are accustomed to. And I'm sort of feeling the same way. His situation seems desperate to me, but I can't fully relate to it. I'm like the proverbial man with no shoes who feels suddenly better when he runs across a man without feet. One man's ceiling is another man's floor and all that. And I don't feel guilty about my advantages. I don't feel guilty about growing up very middle class. I don't feel guilty about growing up in a home that was different than his. I feel thankful. I feel sad for him. I grew up very middle class back when there was a middle class in America. I have lived most of my life being what I feel is upper middle class. And well, the older I grow, the more I realize that I'm among blessed company, privileged, advantaged. Two parents who are still together after more than 6 decades, a wife who's been by my side for almost 4 decades. 2 grown kids with families of their own, 5 grandkids, everybody's healthy, mostly happy. Well, the grandkids are mostly happy until they don't get their way, which does happen often, thanks to parents who are trying to teach them discipline and self-control. A lifetime spent mostly in leadership roles in business. My life looks nothing like his life. But I can't help but consider the phrase, yeah, but there before the grace of God go I. He has not lost the desire to, well, it doesn't seem that he's lost the desire to push. Energy, I don't think, is so much the problem. And I don't think energy has not been the lifelong problem. Direction, that's been the problem. And more than once, I use a phrase that I have used before, one that I first heard from a mentor who is more than 15 years my senior. I'm looking in the face of a man who's trying to outrun his past. It always reminds me of a book that I read when I was a kid. I don't remember how old I was when I read it. My Shadow Ran Fast. I look at that book today and I think, you know, it had some pretty rough verbiage in it, but a book written by Bill Sands, My Shadow Ran Fast. It was a book that made an impression on me. Well, shadows do run, and they do run fast, and we can push hard to catch them in an effort to outrun them, and it's very, very difficult, especially if our shadows, if our shadows are as storied as this man's past, and he has failed, no matter how good the company, it's not fun. It is not fun to try to outrun your past. I mean, wrecked lives are, it's hard to get past. I've seen enough of them to believe that. And I know just the moments of being wrecked, and I've had just mere moments of being wrecked. I know how difficult those are, and I can't imagine where that is just more typical of your life than not. And so mostly I listen. Occasionally, I'll scatter in some cheerleading, encouraging him to keep pushing, but in a direction that can serve his character, his improving his character. Not that he's not a bad guy. I mean, he's really a good guy. I think he seems, by all accounts, to be a good guy, just guilty of really bad choices. And I feel like I'm smart enough. I feel like I'm wise enough to distinguish between the two. I feel like I'm a good enough judge of people. And so the conversation goes to expectations. The conversation morphs to accountability. And of course, it always includes the main topic of this website, which is why I hit record today. Wisdom. Richard Pryor, he played the role of Hambone. Hambone was an old man character. And while playing that old man character, the old man says, "You don't get to be old being no fool." Well, that sounds good, and in fact, it even sounds wise. The problem is it's not true. It's completely untrue, because there are plenty of old fools roaming the earth. There always have been. Now, there are plenty of young fools as well. Young fools who don't learn. Young fools who get stuck. Guess what they tend to become? Yeah, old fools. They become old fools if they live long enough. This guy's lived long enough. He's lived long enough to consider himself an old or an aging fool. What do you say? I say the only thing I know to say. It's time to change all that. Time to get unstuck. Time to push in a different direction. Time to establish some new habits. Time to get some new standards. Time to make some new choices. It's not therapy, because I don't know how to do that, but it's therapeutic. I keep urging him to alter how he thinks and how he sees things. But I realize, it's like trying to encourage somebody to just be different. it sounds exactly like what he needs and what he wants, but where's the how in that? I've not, for instance, lived a life of crime. And so if something were to happen and I were to need to get my hands on some more money for some crisis, my mind would not immediately go to robbing a store, robbing a bank, selling drugs, anything criminal. My mind just would not go there. Would yours? Probably not. But you do know there are people in the community where you live, where you are right now listening to me. There are people in your community that if life presents them with some challenge and they need another $100, it's the first place their mind goes. The first place their mind goes to is, well, I could sell some drugs. I could steal something. But your mind doesn't go there. My mind. So here's the question. Here's the real challenge is how do you change that thinking? How do you change that? I mean, you talk about this enormous societal problem of making sure somebody understands there are other options. Because for you and for me, engaging in some criminal activity, it's not even an option. It doesn't even cross our mind. And yet the very things that cross your mind and may cross my mind don't cross their mind. I don't profess to be bright enough to know how to close that gap. And I sort of feel like that's what I'm asking when I'm saying new habits, new standards, new choices, new thinking, new ways to see things. When you're pushing 50 and you've got not much else to lose, it may help. Because the bottom provides a place from which you can push harder in a different direction. You know, it's a little bit like having your back up against a solid concrete wall. Well, okay, now you can push knowing the wall ain't going anywhere. I mean, it just means that you're going to have to push out. You can use the wall for leverage because, well, the wall's the wall. It ain't going anywhere. You know, it's physics or something. And I think hitting bottom is like that. Where else are you going to go? And it's why we often use that phrase. You know, I mean, when you're down on the bottom, there's nowhere to go but up. So I try to shake him. Not literally. It's what I do. I try to just shake him metaphorically, not too hard, just enough to alter his thought process and his choices. You know, it's a little bit like distracting a kid, a child who's pitching a wall-eyed fit. I mean, just anything to snap him out of it, you know, just distract him. And I lean hard on the fact that most everything that he has tried so far, in fact, everything that he's tried so far, it hasn't worked. Which begs the obvious question, what have you got to lose? Well, he's got nothing to lose. And I don't get any argument back. And for good reason, he knows I'm right. And we focus on the good news. And there is good news. I can tell you the biggest good news that comes from all of it is he's not bitter, which is kind of amazing. I mean, he's not bitter about anything. Regretful? Well, yeah, absolutely. He's sad about the broken marriages. He is sad that he's alone today. But he knows what he should have done better. He knows what he could have done differently. And he also knows that he didn't do a great job of selecting the right women. And, you know, the boy that he once was never did learn how to select a wife, much less live with one. I mean, what do you do when the things that many of us take for granted are just not part of your background? They're just not part of your raising. And I think of my wife, and I think of my grown son, and I think of my grown daughter, and I think of the people they married, and I think of my five grandchildren, and I think of my own failings as a man, as a husband, as a father, now as a grandfather. I mean, just yesterday, we hear about this interview with Tiger Woods. You've probably seen this. He Charlie Rose, I think, did the interview with him. And Charlie Rose asked him what he would do differently at this stage of his life. And he said that there's really only one thing that he would do differently. Okay, just, you know, Tiger Woods. I don't care if you follow golf or not, which I don't, but come on. He's a big enough figure. We all know the story, the history. He said there's one thing that he would do differently. Just let your imagination run wild and think about what that one thing might be that he would change. You know, you're going to be disappointed because that's not what he said. No, Tiger Woods said that the only thing that he would do differently is he would have stayed at Stanford one more year. Really? He would have stayed at college one more. Proof that talent and wealth will not get you wisdom. Proof that foolishness is a habit. And that's the point. Tiger isn't so different than the almost 50-year-old wreck. A lifetime of habits hard to break. Except this guy, he doesn't have Tiger's wealth, but he's wiser than Tiger because he's got regrets. Well, he's got suitable regrets, reasonable regrets, the kind of regrets that he ought to have. And they don't have anything to do with college and having spent one more year in college. No, they involve his behavior and the people who have entered and exited his life. Sure, he regrets some circumstances, but I think he knows logically that he wasn't the cause of those when he was a child. He had nothing to do with being brought into the world by alcoholic, abusive parents. Life happens. Sometimes it's good, other times, in his case, not so much. He didn't get a very good first hand. And sadly, he never learned to leverage that bad hand into anything more than a long string of just more bad hands. I don't know. I'm not a card player. I'm not a gambler, but I know the metaphor well enough to tell him, I think it's time to fold. I think it's time to fold. I think it's time to stand up. I think it's time to walk away from the table. I think it's time to find a new game. I think it's time to clear your head. I think it's time to forget your losses because you're never going to gain by focusing on them. Instead, get into a game that fits your talents, that fits your desires. Mostly, find a game that you can win. More often than not. And it starts with pushing away from the table that you've been sitting at your whole life. They are Sonia Dada. Sonia Dada. The name of the record is the same thing. It is their first record from 1992. Buy it as download. Anywhere music is sold, the name of this track is As Hard As It Seems. And as he and I are talking, there's no doubt this is going to be as hard as it seems. I think it's really, really hard to push away from a table that you've been sitting at your whole life. And I don't have any doubt that it's going to be really tough for him, but I don't know what else to tell him. I mean, the table that you're sitting at, it hadn't been working out too well, so you might as well give that up, find a new game, push away from this table, and that's hard. I suppose the devil you know is more comfortable than the one that you don't. But that's fool's gold, and so I tell him you're no fool, so don't act like one. Yeah, I told you I was a cheerleader. What is your push? You've got one. You may have a million of them. And that may be a problem. Hamster wheel and all that. But much of the push, I suspect, is negative. And it needs to be. It needs to be the stuff that we push ourselves away from. Like he needs to push away from this table that's not working out so well for him, this game. But much of it is positive. It's the stuff to which we aspire to acquire the stuff. And I don't mean things, but talent, skills, expertise, know-how. And it's also, I think, the stuff that we hope to accomplish. For all of us, it involves pushing away from the past by learning what we can, turning loose of the stuff that, well, that teaches us nothing, but might sometimes encourage bitterness, which thankfully for him it did not, but for most it does. And it means pushing toward a better life, and maybe pushing harder toward a better life, a better us, better choices, better behaviors, better outcomes. 50 isn't too old to start over. I mean, come to think of it, if you're alive at any age, it's not too late, is it? I mean, it may mean that you have to push harder, faster because, well, you're running out of time, but as long as you're making progress, does it really matter if you reach whatever goal that you have fixed? Just this morning on College Game Day, and my huge Nick Saban fan, and I'm going to give you an episode to go back and listen to because I'm still, even after nearly 3 years, I'm rather proud of this episode. It was episode 4010 of Leaning Toward Wisdom, leaningtowardwisdom.com. It's an episode that I did about finding the process that works for us, finding the process toward our own greatness. And one of the case studies that I pointed out was Nick Saban. Nick Saban is a coach that is ridiculously obsessed with the process. And he said just this morning on College Game Day on ESPN, he doesn't talk to his team about winning. He talks to them about performing at their highest level. And it's a grind, he said. They ask him, well, what do you do? What do you do during the season to kind of rejuvenate yourself and whatnot? And nothing. He's all in. He said, I enjoy it. It's a climb. And you don't stop climbing. You keep climbing, you keep climbing, you keep climbing. And people may think, well, you know, he just seems like some overbearing, hard-nosed football coach, and he is, but man, I can so appreciate where he's coming from. I mean, does it matter if you reach whatever goal that you have fixed? You know what? It probably does not. Because we all know that the goal reached is never enough anyway. The push is the process. The push, it's our life.
On the edge of the night, on the edge of the world, looking over the side, and he don't see no.
They are Sonia Dada from that same record, 1992. The name of this track is one of my all-time favorite songs, The Edge of the World. He seems like he's at the edge of the world, and maybe you do too. Don't stay there. Do not admire the view from the edge of the world. It's not a good place to stand. Push away from the edge. Come back to wisdom. You've just spent 43 minutes with me, and it's almost over. And I can't tell you how thankful I am that you're here. If you are a listener and you are so disposed, join us over at the Facebook group. You can go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a link. Click it, knock on the door, I'll let you in. I appreciate you being here. I hope you'll tell a friend about the podcast. And not to burst your bubble, but you have just heard a fictionalized account of real and sort of real and even completely fabricated events and people. Because that's how I chose to roll today. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.